The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow, and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour, and they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit truegreen.com, TrueGreen.com, to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
Hello and welcome to Circling the Bases, proudly presented by RotoWorld and NBC Sports. My name is DJ Short, and I'm back here once again with Eric Samulski. Final week of the MLB regular season. Some fantasy leagues already wrapped up, others still going this week. We wish you the best of luck in your respective leagues. One quick programming note here at the top, we'll be doing a special postseason preview episode next Monday. That's the off day before the wild card series gets underway on Tuesday. It's going to be here before we know it. We'll have a couple of special guests on the show next Monday, but today's show is all about wrapping up the 2023 regular season from a fantasy perspective. Eric, we're going to hand out some awards today. Are you ready?
Yes, I love virtual hardware that doesn't exist, and we just kind of like make up and nobody really knows they won anything. It's my favorite type of award show.
Yeah, especially for the LVP winners, the opposite of the MVP, we hope they don't hear about it. You know, we don't want to kick them when they're down. But we're still going to do it publicly.
Some of them know what's happening. They're aware. Yeah.
They know the deal. They know they've been bad. Before we get into that, just a quick reminder here. NBA training camp starting. Here's your chance to get an assist with your fantasy draft with the RotoWorld Basketball Draft Guide. Visit NBCSports.com. Use the promo code HOOPS23 at checkout to score a 20% discount. You also get a $10 e-gift card to Fanatics and free season tools all season long with your draft guide purchase. Lots of great stuff in there. And I'm not just saying that because I'm biased. This is loaded with everything you could possibly need to get your draft, to get the best draft you can. I know we still got a little while here before the NBA season starts, but get your prep underway. Go to NBCSports.com today. So, Eric, why don't we start out in the positive here?
Yeah, you got to start positive.
Yeah, you know, we'll start positive. And this is kind of the most obvious award ever for our fantasy MVP. it's Ronald Acuña Jr. We're not going to let the drama hang for too long here. So Acuña, two steals away from 70 steals, would be the first ever 40-70 season. Is he the first 40-60 too? I believe he is.
I believe he was, yeah. And obviously a lot of that has to do with the new rules, but you don't want to take too much away from the accomplishment. It was a tremendous year.
Yeah, 40 homers, 101 RBIs, 68 steals, 143 runs scored in 153 games, also hitting .336. pretty incredible. Still has a few days left to go here. We'll see if he gets to 70 steals. I would guess he will. Maybe one of the best fantasy seasons of all time. Maybe not. Probably not a maybe. It's like top two or three.
I think it might definitely be. You know, again, it's really hard to compare previous seasons to current seasons when rule changes and stuff happen. But, you know, we don't want to belabor that point because it's been a ridiculous year and it's just great from a fan perspective. Even I'm sure as a Mets fan, just to see him healthy and playing baseball, because, you know, when he hurt his knee, there was always the question of like, what type of player was he going to be when he came back? And it's just great to see that the answer is the same player.
Right, exactly. So obvious number one in fantasy drafts next season. I think the only like, you know, arguable best fantasy season of all time would be like Barry Bonds, early 2000s. But even, I was looking at this earlier, even in the years where he walked like a million times, like he had less runs scored than Acuna here.
Yeah.
In those seasons, which is crazy to think about, but true.
Yeah, and he certainly had fewer stolen bases too, which
it was like, I think his high in those like big power seasons was like 29 steals, which is still pretty awesome.
That's true. Yeah, true.
So I think you gave some love to Matt Olson too, which I did. Like.
I mean, yeah, the answer is Ronald Acuna. I did just say if we weren't going to both talk about the same guy, a little hat tip out there to Matt Olson, who finished top five in weighted runs created plus and top five in offensive war. I mean, 53 home runs, 124 runs scored, 133 RBIs, 281 average. I just feel like he doesn't get discussed alongside, you know, Acuna, Betts, Freeman.
Right.
And while he probably doesn't belong in the tier that Acuna does this year, because I don't think anybody does, I think he belongs in the discussion with Betts and Freeman as that next best hitter this year. And I think he just gets glossed over too often.
Yeah. And it probably Olson was a third rounder in most leagues, maybe fourth, depending. So certainly outkick the ADP, which is always big too. As for least valuable player, I picked Tim Anderson. His preseason ADP on Yahoo was 69.2. And here Anderson is 507 plate appearances, just one home run, 590 OPS, 248 batting average this season. He was a 288 career hitter coming into this year. So just completely falling apart at the plate. I don't really know what's going on with Tim Anderson, but obviously next year, you know, fringy pick, I would think, in a standard mixed league.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot is going to depend on what happens with that White Sox team, the direction that they go in and where he winds up and all of that stuff. I'm not ready to fully write him off. And I do kind of think that like there might be some interesting buy low potential there because, you know, he's 30 years old. He still stole 13 bases this year. So, you know, I think he's still a 10 to 15 steal guy. And he was never a huge power hitter. So like you just need that batting average to come back up for him to accrue some fantasy value. But yeah, he was, I think he's the obvious choice. I added Jake McCarthy because it was another one ADP, you know, relevant where Jake McCarthy on average was being drafted just outside of the top 100, going into the season. He was drafted ahead of, if we're looking at just outfielders, he was drafted ahead of Yelich. He was drafted ahead of Castellanos, Anthony Santander. Those are guys that are just like right around him. And then also drafted ahead of potential Cy Young Blake Snell. And this was just all built on an incredibly small sample size of last year. And in, you know, he's only played 95 games. He has 26 steals, but he's hitting 240. He has two home runs with 15 RBIs. You basically drafted Dairon Blanco.
Yeah.
Is almost exactly what you drafted with a pick just outside of top 100. And so I think if you spent that resource, you're hating that you did that.
Oh, and I did that in a couple of leagues for sure. I think during spring training, I actually said he could be like the poor man's Corbin Carroll. And he's the extremely poor man's Corbin Carroll. He's the destitute Corbin Carroll at this point.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow, and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour, and they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit truegreen.com, TRUGREEN.com, to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
So let's go to Fantasy Cy Young Award winner. And again, I think this is mostly comparing ADP versus production.
I think so.
I'm going to Blake Snell. His preseason ADP on Yahoo was 120.6. He had a great second half last year. And, you know, we all know what he's done this year. Yes, the walks are really high. He has 99 walks. So the whip is a little higher than you'd like, 1.189. But 225 ERA, 234 strikeouts on 180 innings. I think he wins the actual NL Cy Young Award as well. We can debate, you know, deserved ERA, all that kind of stuff, and secondary numbers. But as far as strict fantasy, it doesn't matter. 225 ERA, I'm going to get it done for sure.
Yes, none of that is relevant to actual fantasy production.
Yeah.
I went with Zach Eflin, and that was another one where I'm comparing ADP. I think Blake Snell is a great choice. You know, Zach Eflin was going basically around pick 300. He was pick 274 in NFBC. He was pick 337 in Yahoo. And he delivered 172 and two-thirds innings of a 344 ERA. And a 1.03 whip with 182 strikeouts, and he won 15 games for the Tampa Bay Rays. And, you know, this is, I think a lot of people thought, oh, the Rays spent the most money they've ever spent in the offseason on a player. It was for Zach Eflin, and they are a pitching smart organization. They have a plan. They're going to get a lot out of him. But obviously by that ADP, you still saw people didn't really trust that either Eflin would be healthy enough to play the full season or just how good they would make him. But yeah, this is a really solid season, and you got a lot of really quality work out of him from a low ADP. And I'm not only giving him this award because he's my most rostered player in NFBC formats, because I think my second most rostered player was Tyler O'Neill, who won't be mentioned here.
Exactly. Yeah, when we talk about LVP earlier, least valuable player, like, we don't want to mention the players who were just hurt. You know, like, yeah, if you're hurt,
that doesn't qualify.
Exactly. So Tyler O'Neill has had his issues as well. So going over to the other category of pitchers, Fantasy Cy, S-I-G-H, Cy Young, I will take Alek Manoah. And this is someone who's third in the Cy Young Award balloting last season, had a 2.24 ERA. I think we knew that wasn't all real. The expected ERA was like a run higher, didn't have the huge strikeout rate. So he was a natural fade, but not to the point where you thought he was going to completely fall apart.
Right.
59 walks in 87 and a third innings. I didn't see that coming. 5.87 ERA and 19 starts. Seems like there's some arm issues going on as well. Lots of weird stuff going on between his relationship with the organization. So I don't know what the future holds for Manoah, but his ADP in Yahoo drafts this spring was 64.1. So he's a very high pick, likely as a number one starter in many leagues, and couldn't be a bigger disappointment.
Yeah, I think you mentioned the arm troubles. That was super interesting to me, which I found out on the RotoWorld news blog Shift. We're still doing MLB news every day. We'll do it in the offseason, so keep checking the player news over on RotoWorld. But he received multiple injections in his arm. I saw that last week, and it was weird because we didn't hear that early on. We just heard he wasn't ready to compete, and we didn't really know what that meant. There was a lot of obvious talk about like his weight, and some of that is fair and some of that is unfair. And then now we're hearing he received multiple injections, not just one, in his pitching arm, and is seeing specialists to rule out like thoracic outlet syndrome and all this stuff. And you're like, it just kind of came out of nowhere a little bit.
It wouldn't make sense, though.
Yeah, and I do think that that adds a little bit more credence to like why he was bad this year, but also makes you way more nervous for the future because who knows what's going to come from that.
Yeah, thoracic outlet, you know, syndrome. We saw what happened with like Matt Harvey, for example. Yeah. Was never really the same. So hopefully it's not that outcome. I mean, Steven Strasburg was a similar situation.
Right. Yeah, the pitcher I gave it to threw 187 innings so far this year, so no injuries to speak of there. But it's Aaron Nola. You know, this is a guy whose average ADP across the main sites was 25 overall this season. He was 32nd overall in NFBC drafts. He was 26th overall in Yahoo and 18th overall in ESPN. And so far he has pitched to a 4.57 ERA in 187 innings with his lowest K per nine since 2017. His highest home run per nine ever. And the whip is still fine, 1.17, but that may be the only thing that, and I guess he got 12 wins because he pitches for the Phillies, and that's a solid overall, you know, number. But he was it's almost bad enough that he was just good enough to keep on your roster and keep playing most of the time, but he hurt you more often than not. Like a guy like Manoa, you were at least able to move on from at some point. I feel like if you check the rostership rates at most leagues, Nola was still as close to 100% rostered as possible. And just really wasn't giving you much of anything.
Right. Just very erratic as a fantasy ace in recent years. You're really not sure what to expect. I think some of it might be where he pitches. The Phillies defense has gotten better this year, strengthened as the year has moved along. So it'll be interesting to see where he signs this offseason, whether he stays with the Phillies, whether he goes to a better ballpark, better defense behind him. Maybe that helps a little bit. I'm optimistic that he can do better than what he's shown this season. Moving on here to most improved hitter. There's a lot of great choices here, but looking strictly from a fantasy perspective, Josh Lowe with the Rays is my pick. Basically, nobody talked about him this spring at all. And I can understand that. Last year, hit 221, had a 627 OPS, over 198 fielder appearances. I think there were questions about, you know, the Rays are, you know, finicky about lineup, like how much can he play? But here he is, 284, 19 homers, 79 RBIs, 32 stolen bases, and 35 attempts. So very good in terms of percentage caught stealing, 65 runs scored in 131 games. The strikeout rate is significantly lower than last year. It's still a little high, 25%, but you'll take that with like the speed that he can offer. Certainly the batting average is improved from last year. The chase rate is still high, so improved hitter might be a little bit of a misnomer. I think there's still some things he has to work on, but he's only 25 years old. I think there's room for improvement there and across the board fantasy production out of the outfield, which we like.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned it's improved from a fantasy perspective. There are still some flaws in the approach, but big into Josh Lowe. He is the impetus for an award that we'll get to later. And, you know, he would have been my choice for this as well. But I went with Spencer Steer. Again, a guy who was drafted almost outside of the top 400 in most places coming into this year. 388 ADP on NFBC. Hit 22 home runs, 71 runs scored, 83 RBIs, 15 stolen bases while hitting 270 for the Reds, playing multiple positions. This is a guy who I think was an afterthought because most people weren't really, on one hand, aware that he had done pretty well in the minor leagues last year before getting a brief call up, but there were just so many other prospects on the Reds who were more enticing. Sure. But you know, Steer has been really, really solid. 10% walk rate, 20% strikeout rate. He controls the strike zone really well. He never even had a minor league season where he stole more than 8 bases. So him stealing 15 here, I think kind of caught people by surprise. But going forward, you know, there's a realistic possibility that he's a 25-15 guy who can hit 270, 280. If he stays in that park, that's,
yeah,
I think they have shown they want to keep him in the lineup, even if that means moving him around places. And I just think, you know, he came out of nowhere to be just a really reliable fantasy asset throughout the whole season.
Yeah, I think the Reds have some interesting decisions to make in terms of which position players they keep and where they play them. I think TJ Friedl is like another good choice here. He's really come out of nowhere. I don't know if the power is for real with Friedl. You know, you look at things like barrel percentage and average exit velocity. He doesn't mark out particularly well there, but he makes contact, has speed, really fits into the identity of that Reds team. Mm-hmm. They're super aggressive. Like you said, with Steer, like, didn't have a double digits steal season in the minors, but the Reds, like, that's their style of play, to be super aggressive. So that's a right. big part of what has made him successful this year in fantasy and real life, for that matter. Most improved pitcher, I'm picking Kyle Bradish, who had some hype during spring training. We all remember that. So he was drafted in quite a few leagues, but still pretty late. 246.8 ADP in preseason Yahoo drafts. Bradish had a 4.90 ERA over 23 starts as a rookie. Here he is with an ERA almost two full runs lower, 3.01 ERA over 28 starts. About a strikeout per inning with good control. Really the ace of that Orioles staff as they look ahead to a potential long postseason run here. Bradish. For so long, we said, like, the Bradish, rather, that the Orioles needed to add an ace during the offseason. Well, they did, it turns out.
They did. They had, yeah. And this is, I mean, this is one example of the, you know, I don't want to say the fantasy community because it's a big community with lots of opinions, but he was a very popular sleeper going into the year. I'm not sure the people that wrote about him in the preseason, myself included, expected this. But, you know, sometimes the early hype actually is correct. And right. in the case of Bradish, it was.
Yeah, you know, it's, I think for a long time you would hear, I'm talking like 10 years ago, you would hear about pitchers who are working on a new pitch during spring training. And then like maybe they'd use it in a game like once, and then they wouldn't actually use it like when the real games start. But now when you hear that stuff during spring training, you got to pay attention, because often these little tweaks could take a pitcher to the next level, and players are a lot more open to making these changes.
Yeah, I mean, I hope you pay attention, because I write an entire series about those exact changes. So yes. If you're not paying attention, I'm just wasting my time.
Yeah, wait until spring training. That's going to be a very, very long column.
Yeah, it usually is very long. And you also don't like get StatCast data, and it's hard to see if the pitch is any good visually. So right. it's a mess, but we love doing it. So my choice for most improved pitcher was, I went to the reliever side. I went with Adbert Alzolay. This is a guy with only one real major league season of work prior to this, in 2021, when he was primarily a starter for 125 super mediocre innings. And he flashed last year in 13 innings out of the bullpen, but it was just 13 innings. And, you know, I'm not sure people really knew what to expect. Michael Fulmer came into this year as the, like, oh, he's the, you know, converted starter who's going to be the closer in Chicago. And everybody was hyping up Fulmer. And it was really Alzolay who shined throughout the whole year. 2.71 ERA across 63 innings pitched, 66 strikeouts, a 1.02 whip. He saved 22 games despite not really taking over the closer role until, if I had to go back and look, I would assume it was probably like late May, early June, when he kind of assumed the role. And I just think you feel really good about him heading into 2024 drafts on a Cubs team that should, you know, contend again for the playoffs. And I think that, you know, this is a 28-year-old who his stuff really plays up in the bullpen. And I think, you know, he's a really good, solid reliever that has pushed himself into that like tier two, three-ish range of closers, maybe tier three range of closers.
For sure. For sure. I did get a couple shares of Alzolay in the spring as a, do we still say handcuff, but as a backup plan for Michael Fulmer, who I also drafted pretty much everywhere, and that didn't work. Up next, the Icarus Award. And that was your idea, Eric. Player who flew too high to the sun and then crashed. My choice is maybe controversial, maybe not, but Elly De La Cruz, who when he came up, of course, was a dynamo, and you could understand why. I don't think even now that's diminished, really. When he runs, like, when he's hitting, you want to watch. Unfortunately, recently he just hasn't been hitting at all. Came out of the gate strong, had 11 homers, 20 steals over his first 65 games, .257 batting average, which, you know, you'll take. But last 28 games where he's been in and out of the lineup, he's hit just .157, zero home runs, .445 OPS, 39 strikeouts, and 117 plate appearances in that time. To me, it's like comparable to O'Neill Cruz, where you mm-hmm. see like the StatCast darling type stuff, can take over a game in certain situations, but has flaws in the approach that definitely need to be improved going into next year. I still think De La Cruz should be picked high based off of what he could do counting stats wise, yeah. But there's a lot of work to be done here.
Yeah, and there were a lot of people in the prospect community on Twitter who suggested this might happen. And I think that we have a tendency to just like hope for the best with these young prospects when they get called up and want to see the best case scenario. And early on, he showed that. And so I think it was easy for people to victory lap after like 1 or 2 weeks. And again, this is not us saying like Elly De La Cruz is a bad player. This is just saying that jump to the major leagues is a tough one. And there are some flaws that he has to work out, and I'm sure he will do everything in this offseason to work those out. And you really do want to bet on talent with players like that. But that early flash in the pan turned out to be exactly that.
Right.
My choice feels like kick a fan down, you know, kick a fan when they're down with the Pirates fans. They really don't get much, especially my boy over at Rotoballer Thunder, Dan Palio, who is a huge Pirates fan and was so happy about Mitch Keller in the first half of the season. I give him a lot of flack for ruining Mitch Keller's season because he made a comment early on that should Mitch Keller be in consideration for the Cy Young, and it almost felt like things went downhill immediately after that tweet. But Keller had a 3.31 ERA in the first 117 innings in the first half of the year. Looked really good, actually, and there looked to be like pitch mix changes that were backing up a lot of the success, so it didn't seem like a fluke. But through 71 and a third innings in the second half, he has a 5.80 ERA. His strikeout rate is down to, you know, 23.5%. He has a 1.49 whip. He's allowing almost 40% hard contact. It hasn't been great. I want to say for a 27-year-old that the truth may lie somewhere in the middle, and that he may actually settle in to be like a high 3, low 4 ERA pitcher with this improved strikeout stuff, you know, improved over his first few years. And that could still be fantasy viable, but I think the former top prospect figures it out and comes back to light the world on fire narrative, you know, is not the narrative that he's going to write.
So in terms of like his pitch mix this year, did he change his usage over the course of the year? Or do you think like the league adjusted to this kind of newer version of Keller and now he needs to adjust again? Is it that simple?
I really do honestly think it's a little bit of both. I mean, I think, you know, there's a book, obviously the books come out on pitchers who are doing different things. And the offenses can, you know, adjust to that. The cutter was just a really, really good pitch for him in the first half of the year, and he lost it in the second half in terms of the results against it, right? So he had an 11.8% swinging strike rate on the cutter in the first half and 13.7% in the second half, which seems great. But the pitch had a 2.49 defense independent ERA, which is a stat that tells us what the ERA on a pitch should be regardless of what the defense does. And again, it's not a perfect, you know, way to determine success, but it tells us a little bit about how good the pitch itself is. So he had a 2.49 DERA in the first half of the year on the cutter and a 7.81 in the second half of the year. And he's, but the mix itself didn't really change. I mean, he was throwing all of these pitches around the exact same. The four seam got hit a little harder and was a little slower as the year went on. It like dropped about a mile per hour. So maybe that was part of the reason. But yeah, I mean, I think maybe he needs to go back and look at that cutter, which was a new pitch for him, and really kind of see where it went wrong midway through the year. And, you know, maybe there's some movement on it that changed just as he kept throwing it more and more. Maybe it was intentional and it didn't work. We don't really know. But I think him going back to the drawing board on that pitch and trying to iron out some of the wrinkles will be a huge help for him, because it was really the only pitch that was markedly worse in the second half. His stuff ticked down a little bit across the board, but that was the only pitch where you were like, oh, this did not work.
Sure. We have a few more awards to give out before we do that. Do you have what it takes to lead the team to victory? Select your Ryder Cup fantasy team and play with your friends. Visit gamezone.rydercup.com to learn more and watch the Ryder Cup on NBC, USA, and Peacock this Friday through Sunday.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed, also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
We have a few more and kind of fits in a similar category as the last one. We were talking about Mitch Keller, Mr. Enigma, player who should have better results than they showed. My pick is Joe Ryan, 4.31 ERA in 28 starts this season. He kind of crashed in a similar way to Mitch Keller, came out of the gate really, really strong. And then his fade in the second half, there's some injury stuff in there. Had a groin strain where he missed some time. Hasn't been that. It's kind of been up and down since returning. So 4.31 ERA. The xERA is a full run lower, 3.41. You look at the peripherals, they're outstanding. I'm just using K per nine and walks per nine to give you some context here. 10.97 K per nine, 1.90 walks per nine. I know that's not, those aren't perfect stats as far as rate stats, but anytime you see that, you're like, oh, that's pretty good, pretty impressive. He's someone who I think could benefit with a tweak of his pitch mix. Lance Brozdowski, who is great on Twitter, he has a newsletter you can subscribe to every day. He breaks down pitches and movement and pitch mixes and all that stuff, recently suggested that Ryan should throw less four-seamers and more splitters. So Ryan seems like one of those guys in the offseason, you know, when he reports to spring training, where he's at, what he's working on. Watch that really closely because I think he could unlock another level of performance in 2024.
Agreed. Yeah, and Minnesota showed with pretty much most of their entire staff that they're willing to kind of tinker with and develop, tinker with the arsenal, develop some pitches. So I like that call. I went back and forth on a few players, but mine is Spencer Torkelson. He really came on in the second half of the year, which is why I wasn't sure I wanted to pick him, because, you know, he now has 29 home runs on the season, with 17 of them coming in the second half, in just 66 games. But the reason I picked him is that the batting average never ticked up for him. So despite the fact that, you know, in the second half of the year, he's still barreling the ball incredibly well, still striking out around 26% of the time, walking 10% of the time. He's hitting .236 in the second half of the year. This is a guy who struck out just 25% of the time during the year, barreled the ball 14% of the time, right at the launch angle that we want, you know, didn't have a really high swinging strike rate, has a good understanding of the strike zone. Everything seems to suggest like at least a 250, 260 type hitter. In fact, his expected batting average is 251. And the batting average never got there. And some of it could be his home park, right? It is a pitcher-friendly home park, and that could be robbing him of some hits. But I still believe he'll get there. And I think there's another level there for Torkelson, not just with the power, which we're seeing, but I think we could see a 20-30% batting average boost based on just the type of hitter that he is and the discipline and quality of contact he has out.
Totally agree. I think he's going to be one of my targets in the spring for sure. And if he can get that batting average a bit higher, of course, that helps everything. It helps RBIs, it helps runs scored, all that good stuff. Mr. Pumpkin is our next award here, which is the
This is our October award.
Yeah, exactly. Our early pick for 2024 disappointment. I picked Lane Thomas, who I picked on a little bit a few weeks ago, but he stands out to me. And the main reason for this is the production that he's had this year has been weighted heavily by what he's done against left-handed pitching. 326 batting average, 9 home runs and 175 at bats, 936 OPS. The numbers against righties are not awful, but if he can't duplicate what he did against lefties this year in 2024 with a strikeout rate that's pretty high, especially against righties, it's near 30%, I just don't see him putting up a comparable season.
Yeah, I think, you know, we've talked about him a few times on this show. And we're seeing him struggle at the end of this year. So I think that makes total sense. My pick is not somebody who's struggling at the end of the year. And that's why I picked Michael King. And the reason I picked Michael King is I just really worry. I will say it depends on where he goes next year. It depends on how crazy people get because of this late season run as a starter. There's a lot of talk on Twitter of people just wondering whether he's like the next Kyle Bradish. Is he the next breakout? Is he a fantasy ace? And if that is how he gets drafted, then I think he's going to disappoint. Part of it is natural regression. I mean, he has a 178 ERA over 30 and a third innings since being moved to the starting rotation. He struck out 45 batters and he's walked just 4, which is absolutely ridiculous. And he's doing it against good pitching. The Stuff Plus metrics on Fangraphs love all of his pitches, but there are just some things under the hood that, you know, worry me a little bit. So first of all, he has a 381 defense independent ERA in September. So that's obviously much higher than his 178 actual ERA. Also, you know, the sweeper has been great, and Fangraphs loves it based on its Stuff Plus metric. But it's actually had a worse swinging strike rate since he moved into the rotation. He himself has allowed an 11% barrel rate as a starter. His swinging strike rate as a starter is 12%, which is fine, but not great. And he has never thrown over 60 innings in any season. He's now thrown 94, so he'll get up over 100. But I worry about a guy who has never been a starter. Now you're going to think he's a starter and he's going to throw 150 and give you like this kind of production. I don't know that it will hold up for a full year. So I would love him if he comes into the year as a starter and you could draft him at the back of your fantasy rotation. I don't think it's going to work for you if he needs to be at the front of your rotation.
Right. And he's, you know, he could start strong, but then as he gets into kind of uncharted territory, he could hit a wall and, you know, we'll see what happens there. But interesting pick. Mr. Comeback is our next category. I picked Tarek Skubal here. And really this could be a player coming back from injury. It could be a player who struggled as a rookie and is perking up a bit, but Skubal coming back from flexor tendon surgery, he's been amazing. 2.95 ERA, 94 strikeouts, just 14 walks, and 76 and a third innings over his 14 starts. The velocity is ticked up. The changeup has been a real weapon. a swing and miss pitch, really checking all the boxes to take that next step forward as a potential fantasy ace. Will he be drafted that way? Probably not. I think probably inside the top 30 starters, most likely. So that's pretty reasonable for me. I wonder what you're thinking about that.
Yeah, no, I think he's a logical choice if you're taking the, you know, injury and comeback approach. I've always been really intrigued by Skubal. I felt like he had a problem controlling his secondary pitches earlier on. And we've just seen real growth from him in not only rounding out the arsenal, but also in just like attacking the zone. And so I'm certainly high on him going into next year. Obviously, depending on where he goes, I still think he's going to pitch for probably a poor team. I mean, the Tigers have some intriguing young players, but, you know, it's always a little hard to roster pitchers in fantasy who you just know are going to struggle to get wins. So, again, we'll see how that goes. As you mentioned, I took a different approach for a comeback player and looked at a player who basically had just been kind of like forgotten and totally written off. And I chose CJ Abrams. And I think that last year, you know, he was a top prospect who was traded from the Padres to the Nationals. He debuted with the Padres as a 21-year-old and did not play particularly well and was traded to the Nationals and closed out the year for them, but didn't really give you much in the way of fantasy usefulness. And a lot of people just like totally soured on him, forgetting that, you know, he was 21 years old. And there was obvious growth that was going to happen. And so even though he hit 247 this season, he had 18 home runs. He had 43 stolen bases, 81 runs scored, 63 RBIs. He struck out under 20% of the time. He had only struck out 16% of the time last year as a 21-year-old, which I think should have told us there was more to come there. Sure. 11 of his 18 home runs have come in the 66 games in the second half of the season. So, you know, he's a legitimate 20-40 player with the potential upside for more because next year he's only going to be 23 years old. And so if he's 20-40 with a 250 batting average and the potential for more, I don't know that enough people had that in their range of outcomes coming into this year.
Yeah, and this is a good segue into our next award, the 1 year early award. And maybe you were early on CJ Abrams last year. He cashed this year.
This was the Josh Lowe honorary award where I had him everywhere last year. And then I was like, I can't do it this year. The Rays aren't going to play him. And they did.
So Brett Beatty is my pick for this. Big expectations when he came up from the minors, did nothing but hit in the minors. So he certainly was deserving of it, of a chance, but this year's hit just 215, 610 OPS, and 367 plate appearances, strikeout rate near 30%. Has hit just 165 against southpaws. But the underlying thing you have to know about Beatty, he hits the ball extremely hard. Since coming back to the majors, he's hit a few home runs, actually. I think he's hit three. Two of them over 110 miles per hour, both of them over 432 feet. This is someone who has legit power. I think there was actually a good breakdown recently. Todd Zeal, who does the Mets games on SNY, kind of saying how Beatty's more of a natural opposite field hitter and kind of switching more to a pull hitter. So I think the big question for him going into next year is like, who is he as a hitter? Right. And what do the Mets, do they embrace who he is as a natural opposite field hitter with power to all fields? Or is he going to commit to being a pull hitter? So I think it's going to be interesting to watch to see where this goes going into next year. And yeah, while he hits the ball hard, the fly ball rate was pretty low this year. So I think there's a lot for him to figure out as a hitter, but the talent is there. And I think it has a chance to cash next year, depending on how things work out.
Yeah. Hopefully the Mets play him would be one. Yeah. Mine was Reed Detmers, who I've been bought in on the last 2 years. I guess it hasn't really worked out for me either year. This year he showed flashes really early on, but it has settled into a 4.64 ERA in 141 and two-thirds innings. He did see a bump to a 26.2% strikeout rate, which was pretty solid. 1.36 whip we don't love. The reason why I'm now talking myself into buying back in is that, as I wrote about this Monday in my Pitch Mix column, Mixing It Up, which you can find over on NBC Sports and Roto World, he reintroduced his changeup at the end of August, and he's now throwing his changeup 21% of the time in September. It's his second most used pitch. And Reed Detmers has a 2.04 ERA across 17 innings in September. The changeup is not a big swing and miss pitch, so his strikeout rates have ticked down a little bit, but it's good at inducing soft contact. And so I think that, you know, we kind of always felt like Detmers was a slider guy with a decent fastball and didn't have much else. And so if he actually rounds out that arsenal and can be a fastball slider and changeup pitcher next year, then I'm willing to buy back in, because, you know, I think he is still a talented pitcher who's only 24 years old. So there's right. no reason why, you know, we can't see growth and improvement.
Right. It feels like Detmers has been around for a long time, which not a long time, but a couple of years, which he has, but he's still super young, a lot to learn for sure. Last award, best late season shooting star. So maybe someone who wasn't around all season, or maybe was hurt for a bit, or maybe struggled, but has really turned it on down the stretch. My pick is Royce Lewis with the Twins. He's sidelined with a hamstring injury right now, hopefully back for the postseason, but he's been outstanding coming back from knee surgery. 59 games, he's hit .309, 15 home runs, 52 RBIs, 6 steals, 36 runs scored. Hit 4 grand slams in the space of 18 games. So if you had him down the stretch here, he probably helped win your league. Former number one overall pick of the Twins. Has always had the talent, just been a matter of him staying healthy, staying on the field. So I think big things ahead for Royce Lewis. I think he was selected in the recent 6th round mock draft I did for Tout Wars. So it's telling you where we expect to see him next year.
So my choice is somebody who I told people that they should cut back at the beginning of August, which was Seiya Suzuki, because there were no results to match his hard hit rates, and he was actually losing playing time to Mike Tauchman, and it just seemed like it would never happen. And he responded and has been absolutely on fire in the month of September. He's hitting .375 through 23 games with 7 home runs, 22 RBIs. He has just a 17% strikeout rate and a 10% walk rate, and he has been tremendous. And again, like, he was coming from an international league, coming over, and we thought he would break out this year, and maybe he's now just kind of getting it together at the end of the year. So, you know, I think you might be buying in on Suzuki next year, but he's been great. And then I wanted to sneak in a second one, because I think that more people should be talking about Nelson Velasquez, who was on the Cubs and was traded to the Royals in 19 games in September. He's hitting .258 with 9 home runs and 19 RBIs, 15 runs scored. He has more strikeout issues than Suzuki, but this is a guy who, if he's going to start every day for the Royals next year, has legitimate power. And he may wind up just being like a .240 hitter, but I think you're going to get a decent amount of power there. So he's been really good in that power category to end the season.
One thing about Suzuki, remember, there was a lot of hype about him in the spring because he added like 20 pounds of muscle. Then during spring training, he strained his oblique and started the season on the IL.
Yeah.
Sometimes those oblique issues can linger for quite a bit. I do wonder if that was part of his struggles in the early part of the season, and now he's feeling good. And that, what we were excited about all spring and where the results weren't there, but you could see he was hitting the ball extremely hard, it's finally paying off for him in September. So keep that in mind too.
Yeah, I think that's definitely the case. Also, it's just sometimes your patience wears out, right? Like, we loved the barrel rate. You loved a lot of the stuff you were seeing under the hood, but it was August and it hadn't led to results. And so, you know, I'll speak personally, like, I couldn't wait any longer in some leagues. And sometimes that's the case. And it just, the stuff under the hood doesn't lead to actual surface level results until much later than you want it to. But the fact that there was always that stuff under the hood, and then he eventually got to the results, I think that should make us optimistic heading into next year.
Absolutely. So hopefully we gave you guys some stuff to think about the season we just saw and going into 2024. It's never too early to start thinking about where maybe you're going to place some of these guys going into drafts next year. So again, best of luck this week if you're finishing out your fantasy leagues. We'll see you back next Monday. We're going to do a postseason preview podcast episode of Circling the Bases, so stay tuned for that. Subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcasts, and actually find all your favorite NBC sports shows on Amazon Music. Just head to amazon.com/NBC Sports. Check out the RotoWorld football show with fantasy football well underway. We're 3 weeks into the season. Some interesting waiver wire pickups out there as always. So listen to the latest episode of the RotoWorld football show. Also follow us on Twitter or X if you don't already. Eric is at SamskyNYC. I'm at DJ Short. Take care, everyone. We will see you.
I won't let my active psoriatic arthritis joint symptoms define me.
Emerge as you. Tremfya guselkumab is proven to significantly reduce joint pain, stiffness, and swelling in adults with active psoriatic arthritis. Some patients even reported less fatigue as assessed by survey 1 week prior. Results may vary. Tremfya is taken by injection 6 times a year after 2 starter doses at week 0 and 4.
Serious allergic reactions may occur. Tremfya may increase your risk of infections and lower your ability to fight them. Before treatment, your doctor should check you for infections and tuberculosis. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms of infection, including fever, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough. Tell your doctor if you had a vaccine or plan to.
Emerge as you. Learn more about Tremfya, including important safety information, at Tremfya.com or call 1-877-578-3527. See our ad in Food & Wine magazine. For patients prescribed Tremfya, cost support may be available.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.